8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Knotfest.com presents Talk to Me. With over 300 interviews under his belt and 6 years running, your host Joshua Toomey interviews metal and rock's heaviest hitters. Follow the show at Talk to Me Talk. Here's your host, Joshua Toomey.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into another episode of Talk to Me here on Knotfest.com. The guest this week is Stormy Maya, better known as Cinnamon Babe. The song Rock and Roll is Black is taking over TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, all the great stuff. And it's definitely causing some controversy. So we had to have Stormy Maya on the show. And as always, my co-host Chris Aiken. Chris, how are we doing?
Awesome, man. Happy to be here.
Awesome. Well, I wanted to kind of jump into, have you seen this Metallica lyric video for the Master of Puppets they put out?
You know, I saw it was released today and I did not watch it. I just was kind of like, oh, that's interesting. 35 years later.
I get why they did it. Obviously, the Stranger Things connection and everybody's kind of getting back into the song. And so they threw out an animated clip. And whoever did this animation I don't think has ever watched a Metallica video or or heard a Metallica song or looked at a Metallica album. There's like a ninja going through this thing the whole time, which makes zero sense. It looks like a 1998 Windows desktop screensaver at some points. It's got these like tunnels and stuff going. I mean, it is, I have no idea who allowed this video to happen.
He's a Metallica fan since the Through the Never DVD. Wasn't that what that was called, that movie? Yeah, that they did, and that had like a ninja, didn't it? Or the guy that drove the van suddenly became a ninja or something at some point, fighting off the world.
The most egregious thing of this whole ordeal is during the guitar solo, they do these like guitars that are like flying at you. And, you know, you would assume maybe a Kirk ESP or a James Hetfield Explorer. No, they've got a Dimebag Darrell guitar. I'm like, that's
smart.
Like a Dean. I'm like, that is not what nobody in Metallica has ever played one of these guitars. Well, like they found the guitar clip art.
Well, the Pantera thing's hot right now. I've got to incorporate that into the Metallica thing. It's all about the clout, my friend.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it, man.
Bad, huh? No, I have not watched it yet. I just kind of, my first reaction was, is this really necessary? I mean, I get it. The Stranger Things thing was cool.
Yeah.
But honestly, if you wanted to make a clip, just get them playing live and interweave the clip from Stranger Things. That would be cool enough, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, I'm assuming that you would probably have to, Stranger Things, something may take a little bit more. Obviously, it's going to take a little bit more time than whatever homeboy put into this lyric video. But there were a few lyrics though that I was, I guess, singing my entire life wrong.
Well, that always happens, doesn't it? When you find out the lyrics to any song, you find out that half the shit you've been saying is wrong.
I was just like, oh, okay. Let me pull up the lyrics here. I'll tell you what I thought they were. And what Pain Monopoly, Ritual Misery, I always thought was Rich in Misery.
Yeah.
So until a few minutes ago, I just learned that it's Ritual Misery.
Ritual. I did not know that either, no.
Dedicated.
I always think I said Rich in Misery, just like
yeah. I think ours is better.
Well, dude, there's like some songs. There's some songs that are like that you make up words that aren't the real words, but they feel better and you just stick with them. That's, you know, different genre of music. We talked about this on CMS a couple weeks ago. We were talking about that Blinded by the Light song.
Oh yeah,
Manfred Mann, and that whole Wrapped Up Like a Douche. You know, and it's supposedly revved up like a deuce. And even after reading the lyrics, I'm just like, yeah, it's still going to be wrapped up like a douche forevermore. You know, and just that one that you just read right now is not changing in my mind. No way.
Yeah.
I don't care what James had in his mind when he wrote it. I know what I have in my mind when I sing it.
But yeah, so don't go check out that lyric video. It is a mess.
Skip, skip, skip.
A little bit more on the classic metal front. I wanted to talk to you about Sebastian Bach played a free show in downtown Las Vegas as Skid Row performed nearby in Henderson. The same night, Henderson, Nevada, right, suburb of Las Vegas, where our good friend Jason T. Smith lives.
Sure.
The question here is, do you go see Free Sebastian Bach, or do you go see what they're calling Skid Row these days?
I think for me, because it would be first time, and that Gronwall kid is really seems like he's really good, I would probably go see Fake Skid Row.
Yeah.
At this point, but if I'd already seen both, I would go to Sebastian Bach.
Yeah, I've seen Sebastian twice. I've never seen quote unquote Skid Row.
Okay.
So I think I'm with you on the go see Skid Row over Sebastian, but it's insane that they're basically playing the same town on the same night.
Yeah, is that just coincidental booking or what? I mean, it's not like Sebastian showed up that night and said, fuck it, those guys are across town, so I'm going to play a free gig. Is it? I mean, it was just something he had scheduled, right? It wasn't a total fuck you to the band.
Yeah, it looks like played a headlining show on Saturday in downtown Las Vegas on the Fremont Street Experience free concert series. Notably, Skid Row played at Sunset Station, approximately 11 miles away, as part of the Live to Rock tour with Warrant, Winger, and Quiet Riot.
Well, that's a fair enough distance for a local band. When local bands play 11 miles from each other, they call those tours, don't they?
you make backstage passes if you're going to go on that, yeah, exactly, on that tour. You got your own laminates going.
Too funny. Yeah, I don't know. I would probably, I mean, I would go see that Gronwell kid because I'd want to see it once, but then I would probably pick whoever's better. I mean, if the Gronwell kid is better than Sebastian these days, I would go see that. You know how I am, dude. I am not tied to the original members of anything. I don't give a shit. As long as I care that the music is good. You know, by comparison, if there was a Dokken tribute band playing, or that video that I sent you of Dokken from last weekend, if those were my choices, I'd go see the Dokken tribute band every single time because it would be better.
That Dokken video you sent me today, like everyone associated with Don Dokken should be ashamed of themselves for even taking that paycheck, because I know that's, you know, I know George Lentz is going on tour or playing shows opening for him because it gets his Electric Freedom Band a crowd. Right. And then he gets up and he noodles out three or four songs. But at the end of the night, George walks away going, everyone saying George is great. Don sounds like shit. Yeah. Like so it's no skin off his back. So, but man, that video you sent me today is quite possibly like
it might set the record for worst of all time.
I mean, if you would have sent me that saying that's some local band or some dude at karaoke or biker bar, you know, biker bar local band, any of that stuff, I would have believed it, but never in a million years would you say that was even once a band that sold millions of records?
I know it's, dude. I mean, you know, I'm friends with Don. I'm friends with John Levin. I love those guys. I mean, I really love those guys. And it pains me to say, please retire, because man, it's as a friend, friend, it's embarrassing to try and just kind of not talk about it, you know,
yeah,
what I mean? You know, because everybody that follows this kind of shit does talk about it, and
right,
as a friend of those guys, it really is fucking, especially me, who's a loudmouth about everything. You know, it's really kind of, I will not just be quiet. I will not just be like, oh yeah, they're still out there making their money and that's great for them, and you know, no, I have to say it's awful, you know. And that video is just straight up awful. I mean, I love seeing that in the video that Don's wearing the CMS shirt. Yeah, that's great. I like that.
The whole thing.
I like that, but that's where my love for that video ends. Is like I see my shirt on a really bad vocal performance and possibly drunk or so. I don't know. Do you think he was drunk?
I was reading the comments and it looks like there were some people in the comments that were at the show saying that the Jack and Cokes caught up with him or something like that. So there's so many things wrong with that video. Like even his, you know, messed up arm, like it's just looking bad the whole time. And, you know, he's kind of just fumbling around the stage and sounds bad. The band sounded great. I thought the drummer was killing it. Whatever the drummer's name is.
BJ Sampa.
Yeah. I mean, like they were killing it, man. And George definitely just out there. I mean, even George looks funny though.
He's just with the white hair and the hat and everything. I'm gonna be honest, dude. And I mean, obviously this comes off weird because I do the other show that's fucking based out of this, out of that, that style of music. But right now is just a miserable time for that music. Yeah. You know, whether it's LA Guns canceling shows because it's too hot outside or fucking,
well, at least docking. They canceled this time.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's better, I guess. I mean, would have been even better if they said, hey fans, it's too fucking hot. Tracy can't make it. So we're not going to play, you know, instead of just promoting. See, this is the problem I have with that. Everybody, all of a sudden, all of these bands that are out there doing it, their irresponsibilities are now being showcased. And like the thing with LA Guns, yeah, great. They canceled a gig, as I think they should have, you know, that first time instead of playing in the bathroom. I'm fine with them canceling the gig.
Yeah.
But if you're on social media earlier in the day promoting the gig and promoting meet and greets, paid meet and greets that you're taking money for, then you damn sure have to come on social media and say, sorry, guys, we're not going to play. Somebody from the band needs to get up on the stage at the beginning of the night and say, sorry, LA Guns isn't going to play. Tracy's sick. Refunds for the meet and greets will be available at their website or however the fuck. Somebody should say that. And as of today, nobody has said anything. And that's really shitty. But I mean, if you put it all into context of that style of music, you got the biggest tour of the summer is out there, the stadium tour, which started out with Tommy Lee all of a sudden having broken ribs. Then he didn't. And, you know, Bret Michaels can only play this show and can't play that show because he's sick, but he doesn't have COVID, but maybe he does. And,
right.
You know, and it's just like, you know, every band that's out there right now doing it, it's a bad look right now for all of them. It's like, man, if you're a fan of that style of music, would you be willing to chuck some money at this thing right now at any of these bands? I wouldn't. No way.
No, but what's crazy though, is like that stadium tour, they showed the tickets, I guess they're roughly, you know, selling 37,000 a night, you know, and every, you know, photo I've seen of the crowd, I mean, they look pretty well packed out. And, so, I mean, I'm impressed because, you know, they were worried about, you know, bots and ticket, you know, people, scalpers and all these things, buying up tickets and nobody actually going out to the shows. And I think that was kind of debunked by seeing some of the audiences at these shows.
Yeah.
And, you know, and these audiences at these shows are no better or worse than you and I next year at this Pantera reunion.
Yeah.
Because we don't know what it sounds like yet, but we know that we like that logo on the stage. So we're going to go and we're going to have a good time, even if it's, you know, garbage on the stage.
Well, the difference I think though, is we have a pretty good indicator. All of the guys in the Pantera thing have somewhat of a proven track record of being at least decent. Even Philip at his worst is still okay singing those songs. It's not great, but it's okay. But obviously Anthrax always plays great. And as long as Charlie's not broken, it'll be fine. As long as he's not broken in every way, you know, as long as he shows up, it'll be fine. And Zach is Zach. He's a fucking great guitar player. I don't care what anybody says. And Rex is, well, whatever. He can play well.
Today's Rex's birthday. Happy birthday out there to Rex Brown.
Yeah. I'll not do that.
Two of my favorite people in the world, birthday today, Rex Brown and Ryan Tannehill. So,
wow, no birthday shout outs for me,
dude. How pumped are you that like NFL training camps are back? Like, I've already watched too much people running in shorts catching passes.
Yeah, I started watching some today, and it's like I'm just happy to have the local radio and stuff not talking about getting a rub and tug every fucking day, dude, every day, 6-8 hours. And the worst is taking phone calls from the dummies that listen. I think we should throw him off the team because he got his dick rubbed. It's like, Jesus Christ, enough. Don't, you know, why would you take calls about Deshaun Watson's case? bring up another topic. It has been, I know you're not here, but I mean, you even see it in the on the national coverage. It's bad.
Yeah.
Now amplify that by 100 every show, here. They can't talk about anything else. You know, there's, I don't know if you saw this video, you probably didn't, but there's this video out there of Nick Chubb squatting 660 pounds or something. And it's so bad that it, like, it's so heavy that the bar is literally wrapping around his back and he's squatting that. And I'm like, talk about that. Talk about how pumped this guy has gotten himself for the season.
Right.
You know, that's a good story. That's a positive story. Instead, we're just talking about Deshaun Watson, who's not even going to be here for half the season. So why are we even talking about it? Just let it go and figure out what happens once they say, yeah, he's suspended for 8 games or whatever.
Right. Yeah. It's, I mean, it trickled into once a day on Nashville sports talk radio. So I've heard enough about Deshaun Watson myself. So
yeah,
great quarterback, but man, what a mess. Yeah. It would have to be like, what is the word I'm looking for here? Just like debilitating having to hear that all day long on your radio stations.
It literally has pushed me to, I used to listen to sports talk, you know, a couple hours a day just to kind of keep up with it. And I don't listen to, I have it all in podcast so that I can kind of pick and choose and
skip
anything that says, sexual assault or Deshaun Watson court or Sue Robinson, anything that says anything related to it. It's like, okay, won't be listening to those today, you know, and then it leads, you know, and then me being a new Padres fan, at least I have that was, as a new Padres fan, they've been winning almost every day, which is great. So
I was watching something the other day and they were talking about how great the Padres are. And I'm like, well, if you're going to jump on a bandwagon of a team, there you go, Chris.
Well, let me just again state this for the record. I picked the Padres the day that they switched from the Guardians here.
Right.
The day they turned into the Guardian, the day the Indians were retired officially was the day I said, okay, I'm a Padres fan now. And they did not win a championship or anything last year. So I lucked into, I'm 2 for 2 between the Philly Stars and the Padres. I've done well at picking new teams.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you went, so hopefully, you know, you don't lose the World Series, but, but yeah, well, you've definitely picked some good teams.
Yeah. Now we got the XFL coming. I noticed you were quick to text me and say, I'm not picking a team right now, man. I'm going to wait and see the rosters.
I need to see rosters. I need to see owners. I need to see what stadium they're playing in. I'm not just picking because of the coach.
It didn't work out for you, did it?
It did not.
that you got to admit though, that was amazing. That the coach that was literally the only coach that had Super Bowl experience had the worst record, second worst record in the whole league.
It was no fun. No fun at all.
Well, it was for me.
Oh, true. It was for you. At least you got to go to the championship. So
yes. My lone championship that I've ever seen of a pro sport.
Nice. Yeah. Let's talk about one more thing before I get into my interview with Stormy.
Okay.
One of our favorite people ever. Former Megadeth members Dave Ellefson and Jeff Young have announced their first 4 shows of the Kings of Thrash, the Mega Years, and they will be joined at dates by another former Megadeth member, Chris Poland. I don't know these other 2 dudes, drummer Fred Aching, as well as guitarist vocalist Chaz Leon. You know who those 2 are?
Fred Aching, I know the name, but I don't know from where. A-C-H-I-N. I do know his name. He's from the Bullet Boys. That's where I know him from. That's where I know him from. I was gonna say I know his name. And who's the other guy?
Chaz Leon.
Chaz Leon is.
We're getting some sort of weird other.
Yeah, I don't think it's the real estate agent.
No, man. That's all I'm getting now is
Chaz Leon Band. Yeah, I don't know who he is.
Yeah, me neither. All right. But yeah, those 2 they will be out with David Ellefson and Jeff Young playing Killing You Is My Business and Business Is Good and So Far So Good So What in their entirety.
Well, I'd have to hear the vocalist, but I'll go.
Oh yeah.
I know they announced 4 dates or 5 dates and none of them were here, but
right.
I after Tom Hazard sang those songs for Ellefson, it's got to be a step upward, doesn't it?
You would think so. I mean, I thought Tom did all right, but yeah, we get the only
Tom
thing
was
is
a little too new metal-y, I thought.
Yeah, The only thing I have an issue with Jeff Young is listening to Dave Mustaine's book, which I did, I think, last year.
Yeah.
He didn't have too many good things to say about Jeff Young.
Well, who has good things to say about Dave Mustaine?
Well, true. But I think of the lineage of people, I think he was the most dismissive of Jeff.
Yeah, well, if I remember my Megadeth history, Jeff was like the most strung out of all of those guys, wasn't he?
I believe so. I think he was the most...
Him or Poland.
Like glammy of all of them. I think that's what he was also saying.
Yeah. But they also had such bad drug problems back in that day. And, you know, all those guys, Poland, Bueller, what's his name? Bueller? Chuck Bueller?
Yeah, Chuck Bueller.
You know, all those guys, they were such a fucking mess that it's not surprising that some of them just weren't showing up for gigs and weren't playing well when they did show up for gigs. So, you know, now that they're all pastors and priests and fucking homebodies and construction workers or whatever, you know, you might get a better performance out of them at this point.
Right. It should be fun. I mean, I think it is weird that they're labeling this a special guest, Chris Pullen. Is Chris going to get up with them, or is he just opening the show? Or I think the Mega Gears would be a bigger deal if it was Dave and Chris Pullen playing together with Jeff Young, like showing up.
It might not be on every show either.
Right.
You know, it might just be those four shows that they announced, and there's probably 10 more shows that will not have Chris Pullen because Pullen's probably not going to tour.
Yeah.
You know, so who knows? I don't know. I love those two albums.
Oh yeah.
As long as the singer's good, I'm in.
Yeah, it's going to be good times. It looks like they reunited on stage May 10th at the Ultimate Jam Night, long-running community-oriented show residency at the Whiskey A Go-Go as part of the tribute to the Big Four. The event also marked the first time David and Jeff had played Megadeth songs together since the UK Monsters of Rock Festival in 1988.
I'm sure Mustaine will be thrilled that his classic Megadeth material is being played by guys that he pushed out of his band. So I'm sure he's not going to be happy about that.
It's almost like Ellefson is doing more Megadeth stuff now than he was when he was in the band, because he's doing the Mega Years with Jeff Young. He's a big part of the Nick Menza, you know, movie
documentary. Yeah.
And you know, he's just out there just doing tons
of
stuff, man.
I don't care what Mustaine did. As far as, I mean, you know my feelings on what he did. I hate it. I hate that he pushed Ellefson out and didn't stand by his guy. But that being said, I mean, what is Ellefson supposed to do? That's his career too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, those songs are as much his as they are Mustaine's. His whole, you know, his last 40 years have had Vic Rattlehead on the cover of it as well. So, you know, he's gonna do stuff to play that music. He's got to play that music. And he's entitled to play that music. You know, the only thing I worry about with Ellefson is that he spreads himself too thin sometimes. He's really Ripper Owensing it a little bit right now with a lot of projects. You know, he's got this thing going on. He's got that Polish band Death or Death or whatever we're calling that.
Megadeth.
He's got the Lucid. He's got, you know, he's got some other band I saw too, something of Eden, like Spirit of Eden or something.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's got a lot of projects out there all of a sudden. And I get it. You know, you're not a Megadeth anymore. You got to make your dough. But, you know, I hope you're not going to become the Doogie White of bass players.
The VIP experience for the Kings of Thrash. I'll tell you what they get. I'll tell you what you get. You tell me how much you think it is.
All right.
All right, meet and greet with the band, exclusive laminate, and one merch item. Does not include show ticket. There will be no physical VIP tickets, and then you'll get emailed 48 hours before the show with your instructions. So,
but you get a laminate, a T-shirt, and
meet David Ellefson.
The band.
Yep. For Kings of Thrash,
$100,
dead on. $100 to meet Jeff Young and David Ellefson, basically.
All right. That's not bad. That's not terrible.
Shirt's roughly, what, about $40 at the merch table now? So
yeah.
And the exclusive laminate's a nice little tchotchke to have. So that's probably another. So about $50 extra.
To meet the guys. Yeah.
Yeah.
Seems about right.
I might have to do this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised that the one thing Ellefson does usually with these things is he usually does a dinner. Surprised he's not doing the dinner. I mean, that, and that's a cool perk, man. To like, hey, we'll go to some local restaurant and have dinner with you. That's a pretty cool perk. And you know, maybe they haven't announced it yet. That'll be the $250 thing. You can go have dinner with them at 3 o'clock in the afternoon or whatever.
Yeah, that's a cool. That's always a cool thing. You know, they always show the photos of it too, and it seems like you know, I'm sure eating with David Ellefson is probably pretty good because he does hold court very well, and he tells great stories. And anytime I've ever had him on the podcast, it's like, hey, Dave Ellefson, how was your day? Boom, yeah. 30 minutes
set back.
You know, so
yeah. Well, we got to get him on for this, dude.
Absolutely.
If you want, I can. I'm sure I can push that button.
Yeah, I'll just text him real quick.
Hey, what are you doing right now?
Yeah. He and what's crazy, all of a sudden he'd be like, boop, he'd pop up on the screen.
Yeah, he probably would if he wasn't doing anything.
Yeah. But no, good dude, man. And I'm glad he's going to be out there playing some classic Megadeth. And I mean, just such an underrated bass player, just a machine of a bass player. I've sat there and I've spent like the first part of quarantine learning Dave Ellefson bass lines.
Nice.
And just like, what made you think to write some of this stuff and then just to be able to play it like constantly over and over? Like I've sat there and watched, cause they'll do that thing where he'll just play bass while Dave talks over him or something like that.
Right.
And play the bass line over and over just to not mess up. Is just guy. Sure. He's so talented, man.
He is, man. Dude, since we're talking Megadeth, what do you think of the two songs so far?
Well, that's going to be in my recommendation segment. Okay. Towards the end here, Christopher.
So we'll wait.
That's a tease.
All right. Find out what Toomey thinks of the new Megadeth coming up after this interview.
After this interview with Stormy Maya from Cinnamon Babe, talking all things Rock and Roll is Black. You will know my take on the latest two Megadeth tracks and other things. So let's get into my interview with Stormy Maya, and then Chris and I will be back with you momentarily.
All right.
Of this world, hear my screams, ready to push the minority dream. The people who died to have me seen, they hate to have my words so political. Want me in my place to be traditional. Your image of me is based on fictional. I'm this deep individual, ready to speak. When I dress how I want, they call me a freak. When I talk how I want, they call me a geek. The niggas don't like me because you are weak. I'm not your doll, your little toy. I'm a crazy ass beast that scares off the boys. Get off my page, you're not ready for noise. Entity sent, designed to destroy. I'm here to corrupt, not here to enjoy.
All right, guys, let's welcome Stormy Maya of Cinnamon Babe to the Talk To Me podcast here, notfest.com. Stormy, how are we doing today?
I feel awesome. I'm really happy to be here right now, to be honest.
Awesome. Yeah, I was going through your bio, and there's just so much to talk about, but we have to start where we have to start, and you are causing so much controversy right now. And so I just want to dive into it. You know, Rock and Roll is Black. You know, I listened to it. Actually, I listened to it before the interview was even offered. And when I saw your name pop up in the interview listing, I was just like, absolutely talking to Stormy. So just kind of talk about the song and let's talk about all of the wonderful comments you're getting.
I have like single-handedly pissed off the entire metal community. no, literally, because within 3 days on TikTok, we were at 1.5 million views. Like right now we're at 15,000 comments on the music video on TikTok. And that's not including like the hundreds of duet videos and Stitch videos, like where some are positive and supporting the song. There's a lot of opposers. And there's one guy who made an entire video about opposing the song. He has like 700,000 views on a video opposing the song. Yeah. And, it's definitely caused like a big, like, it's a big divide, basically, wherever it gets posted, like on Afropunk, whether it's like Loudwire, you'll see like a complete like divide in the room of people who either love it or they freaking hate it. So,
well, I mean, being a white guy that's listened to metal my whole life, it's like, yes, I understand that that rock music is black music. I mean, we all grew up, we should have grown up knowing that. So it is kind of, but also at the same time, I don't know if the message is clear, as in, are you taking it away from me? That's what I'm worried about, because I'm like, I really enjoy listening to my, you know, my metal, you know? So if you're taking it back, I mean, does that mean I'm not allowed to listen to it? I think that's a little bit might be lost in the translation somewhere.
So, I mean, I think that's the cool thing about, you know, music is, I guess it can be open to interpretation. But that basically was the big question, I suppose. But no, taking it back means like reclaiming it, because let me just state. So like the main backlash, a lot of people think the song is like gatekeeping, like, oh, you're taking it so like no one else can listen to it. But that's actually not what it is. It's actually a response to gatekeeping. So when I came into the space, like everything I ever always heard was like, this is white music. You know, stick to rap music, stick to R&B, like you're trying to be a white girl so bad. And then this like hate was coming from a lot of my own community. Like a lot of people in the black community feel like this is not music that like we're supposed to listen to. And also a lot of white dudes in the scene were kind of like, what the fuck are you doing here? So I felt kind of like I had everyone kind of against me being in this space. And as I reached out to other alternative black people, other alternative people of color, we kind of all had the same story where people are constantly telling us like, this is white music. Oh, you're trying to be white. You're trying to be white. You're ashamed of who you are. You're a traitor. So what I would always respond to people, I'd be like, well, you know, rock music was made by black people. Right. And that was kind of always a response I would tell people when they would say it was white music. I didn't belong in it. So I basically decided to make kind of a song on it. Now, obviously, in the song, it's a lot more aggressive, the message, and the taking your culture back part, basically just like reclaiming it. Like, you know, I'm going to call this what it is. I'm going to recognize the history of rock music. Yeah. Now, I know it's kind of vague, but I guess that's the cool part that made it viral, is that so many people have theories on it. It wasn't really intentional, because I didn't really think the song was going to blow up so much or get so many views. I didn't really think much of it. I thought like my followers on Instagram were gonna see it and stuff like that, and they kind of already know my message. So I didn't really think much about it. I wasn't like trying to troll anyone, but yeah, people definitely took it and ran with like the with what they thought about it. I was like, nah, I don't care who makes it. I don't care like if white people make rap music or whatever. It's just about, you know, don't try to exclude us from this genre that we helped originate. Like that's kind of weird, you know?
Yeah, and the one thing I've noticed a lot lately is, a friend of mine loves reaction videos. Like, for, you know, he's been watching them for years on YouTube, and he'll send me clips all the time, or check out, you know, it's like, you know, two hip hop heads listen to metal, you know. But basically every time, you know, like the first few videos, it's like, it's, you know, something special or whatever. But towards, you know, when they do so many videos, thing is they just enjoy metal. So it is like a weird barrier there for like people that are hardcore into hip hop. You know, once they get into metal and start listening to metal and start paying attention to what, you know, and it's not just, oh, it's all screaming and it's all loud guitars. Yeah. Like once you like realize what's going on, I think a lot of those like two hip hop heads listening to metal YouTube channels just turn into, I always say they're just music fans listening to music. It's not, you know, you don't have to label yourself as this to listen to that and all that stuff. So I kind of see a lot of that going on kind of in the world too.
I feel like I'm a big gateway. Whatever. I'm a big gateway drug for like a lot of people that follow me that weren't into it, especially a lot of people like in the black community. And like a lot of times in our community, like I said, like this kind of music's not something that is widely accepted. It's weird because obviously rock and roll started in the black community, and then through time it's just like been rebranded to where most people of color and black people tell me, they say, I never listened to this music growing up because I never saw anyone that looked like me.
Right.
And representation is very important, because a lot of times if we don't see ourselves in spaces, we might feel uncomfortable. Like if you don't see a lot of black bands, black alternative artists, or black metalheads, etc., if you go to like a metal show and it's mostly white, a lot of people might feel like, dang, like I don't belong here. So because people might resonate with me, a lot of people are starting to give the genre a chance, which is great. I have people who said they've never heard metal in their life. They never thought about metal. Like, metal to them was just like freaking like demons or something.
Which it kind of is, but you know, but it's fun. It's fun demons.
I mean, they're like, their perspective is like, they're looking at it in this demonized type way of where it's like, oh, wow, like yelling and screaming and like angry white guys. And like, that's what a lot of people look at it like.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of like helping them lean into like more, you know, heavier music. And then from there, they'll go and check out other artists. So it's kind of cool. Like, I feel like I'm kind of opening up the doors. And that's what, like, taking your culture back and all that. It's more about embracing our place here. And I know people get stuck on the hook, but obviously as they listen to verses, it says in there, like, you say, I don't belong here. You say, this is not for me, blah, blah, blah. So it's really like, yeah, it's really like a response to feeling like nobody wants me in an alternative space. But yeah.
Well, I mean, it's crazy too. I mean, obviously growing up a white guy, you know, even in my teens, you know, like I would wear a certain band shirt, and even as a kid, as a teenager, I'm like, all right, I have to know who the bass player is and the drummer, you know, because if anybody questions me, you know, I don't want to be like, oh, I don't know, I just think it's a cool shirt. You know, you never wanted to be that guy, like growing up in like, you know, middle school, high school. So, but I mean, metal is very, it's a tough area to be in, just because like I made an off comment about Judas Priest one day that I was not a fan of Judas Priest. You would have thought I murdered somebody because of the comments, and you know, and it wasn't even like a huge statement. It was just like, you know, the guest was talking about Judas Priest, and I just kind of dismissed it. And then all of a sudden I'm like, I'm not a true metalhead because I didn't love Judas Priest and stuff. And you know, I was just like, oh man, you know, you got to watch what you say or you'll get crucified out here.
The community is definitely one of the most like, it's just, it's very specific rules. I feel like I think metal fans are like traditionalists versus like hip hop and stuff like that. It's okay to diss the older cats. It's okay to kind of like not give a fuck and disregard them. But in metal, it's kind of like, you can't do that. Like Machine Gun Kelly, when he like dissed, like, you know, Corey, you know what I'm saying? So you kind of, you can't like diss your elders. You kind of have to pay homage. And so I think it's just like a genre where it's definitely about like, who do you know? Like, you know, people are always quizzing you. People are always like, well, did you hear this person or this band? And I think the issue that I had, like a lot of people like me, is that I don't look the part as well. And so it makes them even more like skeptical about me. Yes, I'm a woman, which is already kind of like, oh, you're a chick doing this. Right. Then I'm a black person. So it's like, oh, you're into this. And then I'm like known for like being on Instagram and modeling and like sexy pictures. So then it's like, you know, oh, you're trying to do this for clout or something. And I'm just like, what clout? Like, I mean, I could do anything and get clout, I suppose. But I don't have to make metal to get clout. I can make pop music. And
probably, I was about to say, like, what kind of clout are you really looking for if you're going to make some metal tracks?
I don't know. I mean, that's the interesting thing. People are like, oh, it's a cash grab or something. And I'm like, what cash? Like, no. Like, honestly, I would just go to OnlyFans or something. Why would I go and spend my time? You know, like I said, I didn't know Rock and Roll's Black was going to get as much engagement as it did and all that type of stuff. People might think I'm this mastermind that like planned.
Genius.
But no, I literally just made it because that's how I felt in that moment. And it made me feel good. It made me feel like, yeah, like I belong here. And a lot of people, that's why they like it. It makes them feel like, it's like, yeah, this is for me. This, yeah, I belong here too. This is great. So I don't know.
I mean, the one thing I noticed, I was kind of going through the Instagram today, kind of going through stuff and reading comments, but I also found comments from like, you know, Fire from the Gods or Doc Coyle or like a lot of people like that too, that are like, you know, basically pushing you along and being like, thank you for doing what you're doing and praising you for what you're doing and things like that. So I think that growing up again, you know, people of color that would come into our cliques and things like that. I mean, I always felt like, and I always wanted to be as, yeah, you know, I hate using all these trigger words like inclusive and all these other things, but you know, like, but I mean, if a person of color came into the group wanting to learn about Metallica and Megadeth and Pantera and all that stuff, I'm like, let's go, you know, like, and the same way, you know, that every single metalhead friend of mine that I know, you know, loves rap too. So it's not like it's all, you know, let's all be inclusive and diverse and all that good stuff.
I feel like, you know, a lot of it is, it's about social conditioning. I mean, also like shout out to Fishbone. Fishbone actually reached out to us and they want to play together.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. We got a lot of like big people who started like supporting us. Kalani started following us on TikTok.
Nice.
Like, Coolio reached out to us. Reached out. Yeah, like a lot of people were very, very supportive. Like Fishbone was like, yo, we've been telling people this for decades. Like, I'm so, you know, so a lot of people were like, wow, this is dope. It takes a lot of courage to say this in this community. I'm like, I guess it does. I don't know. And then I got backlash and I'm like, oh, I see why you said that. But I think it's about social conditioning. We're told like what we belong in, like we have these boxes that the world sets up for us. And it's like, you're white, you listen to this, you're black, you listen to this. And I mean, we'll see it with like rappers like Eminem and stuff who are told like, you know, you're white, you shouldn't be making hip hop. So it's a problem that we have just in society where we put ourselves in these boxes and we feel like we can't step outside of them. We've made, you know, these illusions of what's white sports and black sports and black music and white music. And the issue behind it is like, then people like myself, we feel like we don't belong anywhere. And like I said, the whole reason behind saying rock and roll was black, because I was telling people the origins of it, the pioneers of rock music, for the simple fact of trying to give people a perspective of like, look how easily you can just mark something like white music. And historically, it's not even just like white fucking music. So it just shows how stupid these like boxes are. And you know, I'm just really big into like letting people do what the hell they want. And what's funny is people probably listen to a song and they probably think the opposite. Probably like, oh, she doesn't want white people listening to rock music. I mean, that sounds stupid. Why would I care about fucking rock music? I just don't want white people to not want me to listen to rock music. You know what I'm saying? But sometimes when we are responding back, it's like with anger and with like, you know, this passion, and sometimes it can be blurred, like what we're saying. You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah. I really, I just don't know if I've ever met that white person that's like, black people aren't allowed to listen to rock. You know what I'm saying? Like but I do see it. I did see it in the comments. Like I was on the YouTube and the TikTok and the Instagram today, like just really like wanting to see like the spectrum, because I mean, there was also a lot of, you know, there was also a lot of people of color in there, like saying, thank you. And you know, you look like me. I'm glad someone else is out there rocking like me. I love, because I mean, the you know, people of color that, you know, we, it says, you know, you grew up listening to, I hate saying all this stuff, but you know, like that, but it said, you know, you grew up listening to My Chemical Romance and Paramore, and you know, yeah, like just that scene alone, you know, like,
yeah,
like that you're few and far between out there. So I mean, trying to find, and that, I guess that's one nice thing about the internet, is it does open up to where, you know, I mean, in my high school, there was 5 metalheads. It's not like it was everybody was listening to rock and metal. It was me and my 5 friends over here that had our super long hair listening to Cannibal Corpse, you know, and then everybody else was listening to Nirvana and whatever else. But I mean, like metal, I mean, we were over here to our own. So what I'm getting at is the people of color in the emo scene listening to My Chemical Romance, all that stuff, few and far between. So I think it's nice for you to be out there for other people to see that and then comment on it positively.
I think that I think race is always a difficult subject because everyone has different perspectives. And I had also got backlash because I made a video about, you know, being afraid to even join the scene because I thought I was going to face a lot of backlash and racism.
Yeah.
And I said, despite that, I decided to do it anyway. And I had thousands of comments on that video telling me that, like, there's no racism in metal, there's no racism in rock music, there's blah, blah, blah. And what's funny is there's literally hundreds of comments from people of color, black people, saying the complete opposite. And there's people who are white saying, oh, there's no racism, I've never seen it. And I always tell them is like, well, how would you see it? Because most of the time, racism, like nowadays in the open world, it's like microaggressions.
Right.
It's like shady comments. It's like looks and stares. It's like things that you really wouldn't be able to see unless you were like behind the lens of it, you know? And so you're not really going to witness, like, if a black guy goes to a metal show and like he's getting like a bunch of like side comments. And like one guy, who was a metal player. He actually responded to my videos and he went to a metal show. And while he was there, he walked past this group of guys that were just like, oh, wow, we're just letting anybody come in here now. And then they were making comments about like, why are they letting people like this in there? And so it's like certain things that you just wouldn't witness or nor see. And a lot of times when we're the minority in a group, we don't want to, you know, make a scene. We don't want to, you know, be like, oh my God, what did you just say to me? Like, we'll kind of eat all the comments and stuff. And what I was trying to explain to people, it definitely isn't like a black versus white thing. It's like just how people treat alternative black folks in general. Because like I said, our own community like comes at us hard. They look at us like we're traitors. Like a lot of the most hurtful comments I get are from my own community. Like I get called a bed wench, which is like, you know, a black woman who I guess had sex with a slave master.
Lord.
Yeah, I've been called like, oh, you want to be a white girl so bad. Like I said, you get traitor, you get whitewashed. And in the black community, like being called these things means that you're basically like against your own people. Like, you know, like you're not proud of yourself. You're trying so hard to be white. And it's used as like an insult that you're just like, you know, basically trying to be accepted by white folks so bad that you're like disowning your blackness. And it's really sad because like, it makes the journey of just enjoying the music you want as an alternative, like person of color, black, really, really difficult. And then, yeah, sometimes you get a couple like dickhead, like racist dudes too. And then like just the combination makes it very difficult to be yourself. And a lot of people in the comments were like, there's no racism in the scene. And then they proceeded with racism. Like they told me, how can y'all have made rock music if you were in the jungle? And
oh, Jesus Christ.
Stick to your culture, go play African drums. And I got things like African Americans that haven't contributed anything to this country but peanut butter. I got called a mud person. I got death threats for the song. Wow. Guy was telling me, like, you have 7 days to die in 7 days.
Bring and I
was
it all like, down.
It was like, okay. And, you know, got called racist left and right. And it just was like insane. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like the hate that it was met with. And then I think the craziest part is how needed the song was. Because as I read the comments, I realized how uneducated people were about the origins of rock. People were saying Elvis made rock music. I had tons of comments saying that rock and roll was started in England. Not true at all. Tons of people were just trying to credit Johnny Cash as making rock and roll. I don't even know how that even, I was like, what? Someone tried to credit Black Sabbath for creating rock and roll. I'm like, you mean for creating metal? Like, I don't think you know the difference. And I was like, rock and roll started in the late 40s. So how can bands from the late 60s create rock and roll? Like, it was just the uneducation was very alarming. Right. And some people say, well, I know the history of rock. I know about Chuck Berry. I know about, you know, Sister Rosetta. I know about, you know, Little Richard. Da, da, da. But like a lot of people don't, like thousands of them, like people literally said, I can't name one black band. Black people don't even make this kind of music. So the ignorance was alarming. And like people were saying like, oh, well, they're saying it came from blues, but blues was made by white people. And I'm just sitting in my comments like, there's no way. There's no way people are this uneducated, but they are. And then they agree with each other. And it's like people are like, okay, well, what does it matter who started it, right? Music is music. It matters because when people from a certain group feel gatekeeped and pushed out of something, but they historically had a part in making it, mm-hmm. It is kind of weird. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
It's a little bit weird. Like, you know, it's like if tomorrow they started pushing black people out of hip hop and rap music and started saying, this is white music. Why are you making hip hop and rap music? And then they started trying to credit Eminem as the creator of hip hop. Like, that's kind of the same thing. You know what I mean? And then you yourself can't make the music that historically you made, you know? And
right.
That's why it's messed up. You know what I mean?
Well, we've done 20 minutes on race, so let's kind of get it a little bit. No. I mean, it's caused a lot of, you know, the internet to kind of come. And you are a much better person than I am for having to deal with any of this stuff, just because, like, I would want to just fight everybody on the internet, and I would probably get nothing else done in my day from, like, you know, sitting there arguing back with people.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I guess, but also I do look at myself like I am a metal artist. So it's not like I'm really in a popularity contest. Not saying metal artists should be hated. I'm just saying that, like, if you make, in my opinion, if you make metal so that like people just adore you and like or like, oh my God, you're it's, that to me is like pop music, you know? Right. Like if you're really trying to be like model of the year. So,
well, I mean, that's always the thing. I mean, you would rather be loved or hated. You don't want to be down the middle. You don't want to put out a Cinnamon Babe song and people be like, it's okay. You know, you want either I love it, I hate it, it's making me mad, I'm pissed off, you know, all this stuff. You want that aggression out of it. But
I make metal to say the things that I want to say that, you know, I guess piss people off or that I've always been scared to say. So, I mean, that's why I make it. So,
well let's get back to the origins of Cinnamon Babe. I mean, when did you sit down and say, hey, I want to start writing music? You know, who did you start talking to? All that good stuff.
So I started Cinnamon Babe a year ago. And like, you know, honestly, something that I wanted to do for a while. I had dabbled in music before, but it was a different genre. I had dabbled kind of was like pop rap stuff. And it's because I had a manager at the time. They first got me into music. And he was like, yo, you got all these Instagram followers. You should capitalize off of like your brand that you already have built. And he was like, you already have this like persona of like cute and sexy and blah, 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 blah. Like, so you should like kind of just capitalize off of it, do little TikTok trends and all that. I agreed. I did it for about 2 years. I grew very unhappy with it because it just felt very soulless and very pointless. I get like, you know, dancing and like pop music is fun. But for me personally, on an artist level, it just felt like, what am I doing? Right. What am I like talking about? I was just talking about like twerking, getting money, you know what I mean? And like, no shade to artists who make music like that. But what's fucked up is that I don't even really listen to music like that. So I was just kind of making this vapid music that had like no meaning. And I started thinking like, am I going to want to listen to this or like, you know, perform this when I'm 40 years old? Like, what is this like contributing to the world? Like, it's just stupid. And I kind of started looking down on what I was doing. I just felt like it was pointless. And yeah, I'm already someone who capitalizes off my looks and stuff like that. But I was like, okay, so my entire existence is just going to be this Barbie chick who just shows off her body. Like, that's all I am. And
I go through that all the time too. So
yeah. And you know, like I said, like, is nothing wrong with it. Just for me, there's so many topics that I wanted to speak about, whether it was like my childhood trauma to the abuse I went through, to the poverty I went through, to just the day-to-day things I deal with, like, you know, mental illness to, like I said, trauma and stuff. And I just had no outlet for it. So Cinnamon Babe, this guy inboxed me one day and was like, hey, Cinnamon Babe. Like, I think he was trying to flirt with me. And Cinnamon Babe was like really catchy. So I was like, that's a catchy thing. And like, I kind of just like kept it in the back of my head. And I was listening to Straight Line Stitch, one of my favorite bands.
Alexis,
yeah. Yeah. And Alexis like really inspired me because like, what's funny is even though I've been a metalhead for a long time, I hadn't really listened to a lot of black fronted bands, especially black women fronted bands. And it just kind of boils down to representation really matters. And I remember like watching the music video. And I had just discovered them when I was like in the bathroom. I was listening to Black Veil, one of their best songs. Mm-hmm. And I remember just like while she was like performing, like her words like resonated with me so well. And then I just like saw her image just like really stuck with me. And I was like, damn, like I wish I was this chick. Like I really wanted to be her. Like I was like, damn, I want to look like this. I want to sound like this. And I remember just thinking like, I could never be this. Like, cause I don't know, just something about the rawness and the honesty. And I was like this freaking fake puppet image. And I was like, damn, like, I wish I was like this. And
have you ever spoke to her?
No, I haven't. I really wanted to be like her though. Like she really is what inspired me. Cause it really took for me to, I listened to Kitty before and all that type of stuff, but it's like, she kind of like just reminded me of myself and the words she was saying. And I just, you know, I just felt like one of those epiphany moments where I'm like, damn, like, I feel like this is like me right now. And she really gave me that confidence to say, like, you know what, I'm gonna try this. And I was really intimidated by making rock music because no shade to other genres, but especially when it comes to hip hop and rap, no shade, but it's like so much more that goes behind the production of metal and rock than does in a lot of other genres. A lot of other genres, like there's producers, they make a beat, people kind of like rap over it. But like with the metal and rock stuff, it's so much more complicated. Like when I'm producing, it's like we have, you know, we record the drums live, recording bass, and then we have the electric guitar, and then we have vocals and backup vocals, and it's just so much that comes together, and it's a lot. And I was intimidated at first, but that's how Cinnamon Babe came. I kind of just said fuck it, and I just did it, and yeah.
I think it's insane, the power of TikTok and the power of Instagram. I mean, you've got 850,000 Instagram followers, and woo! You know, and I was speaking with Jelly Roll a few months ago.
Oh, I love Jelly Roll.
He's great, and but he was one of the first people that really talked about going TikTok viral or with a song, and like a song hitting TikTok just right to where people hear it over and over and over, and then you want to go find it on, you know, Spotify or YouTube or whatnot. So I mean, that's exactly what you're talking about with getting Rock and Roll Is Black out there and just catching fire, man. It's crazy. It's crazy how quick things can happen now, because I feel like, you know, growing up, it was you record the album, you wait 6 months to put it out, you put out a video, blah blah blah. But now it's like you could record a song tonight, put it on TikTok tomorrow, and all of a sudden people are doing silly dances to it and stuff. It's crazy how quickly things can.
It's a good thing and a bad thing. There's like a lot of pressure, because a lot of our like managements and stuff like that, they really do pressure us to like be on TikTok and stuff like that. And it can be kind of difficult, because it doesn't really happen when you're chasing it. When you make music for TikTok and you're trying to be trendy and you're trying to be quirky,
right?
You know, like I said, I didn't try that with this song. I didn't think this song was going to, you know, what I kept telling my management, I was like, yo, I make like freaking metal and heavy rock. I said, that's not TikTok music. I'm like, who's dancing to that? You know what I'm saying? I'm thinking about like, who's dancing to freaking, you know, fucking heavy ass rock music and shit like that. And I just really in my head couldn't even think about a time that I would be able to go viral or get a lot of views on TikTok for a song. I was like, so what the hell do I said, my shit's depressing. It's dark. Like, where would I go viral on TikTok? And I did not realize it was a controversial topic, and it worked. So I guess.
Yeah. Good stuff with that. let's dive a little bit into acting. Obviously at 2050, you play a sex bot. I think that might have been typecasting. I was watching some trailers today. Talk about, how did you get into acting and you know, just doing things like Shark and things like that?
Oh, God.
I mean, you're a writer, producer, director. It's crazy. Your credits.
Thank you. So I got into acting professionally 2015. I have been a model since 2012 or 11. I started when I was a teenager, and then I got into acting. I started as a theater actor in New York. And then I got 2050 because I actually did a play. And one of the producer directors was in the audience, and he offered me to roll after the show. That was my first movie role, actually, like the first one I ever did. It came out 2018 or something like that, or 19 or something, but we filmed it back in like 2015. But I've done a lot of great things since then, like Hustlers, J-Lo, Cardi B, and all that. That was like crazy. I just filmed for Wu-Tang like a week ago. So that was dope. Nice. Season 3 of Wu-Tang. Go watch it. Hey. yeah.
So when you start Instagram, I'm assuming that's kind of where you first started getting your notoriety. I mean, do you go into it just posting like thinking you're going to get followers, or was it you posted a cute picture one day and all of a sudden, you know, your followers go up, and then you like post another cute picture and you're like, wait a minute, I might be onto something here.
No, I started off as Facebook famous. We didn't really have any like thirst trap platforms at the time. I started when I was 16, and we didn't have Instagram yet. So we had Facebook. And at the time I was like one of the few girls I knew that were even posting like sexy pictures to like Facebook, you know, that's not really what it was for. But I had built a big fan base on Facebook. I had got thousands of followers and like supporters on Facebook, made like a little fan page, had thousands of followers there, like 60,000 followers and stuff like on my fan page. So by the time I migrated to Instagram, I had brought already people with me. So I grew fairly quickly because of that. So actually, yeah, I started on Facebook. And how I started in that whole thing was I was 16. I was in foster care at the time. And I was having like basically I had like a really shitty life. Like, you know, my life was crap, I'm not gonna lie. I was 16. I had just escaped a house fire. I was poor as hell. I was at different foster homes every other week, living in group homes with crazy people. And like this guy came to Dunkin' Donuts where I was working, and he was like, yo, you should be a model. And I was just like, oh, okay, whatever, I'm gonna do it for fun. And then what happened is I started like doing it as a way to kind of escape my reality. So I didn't really think about being Facebook famous, Instagram famous, something like that. At the time, I was making like money from modeling and stuff. Like I was doing photo shoots, swimsuit shoots, and music videos. And at the time, it was a lot of money. I was like, oh, I'm getting $150 for like an hour or 2 hours. $200.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm like 16, you know, 16 years old, and I'm like working at this pizza spot, and I'm working at Dunkin' Donuts. And, you know, when you're in foster care, like, despite what people think, oh, they're taking care of you, they really freaking don't. Like, you're really kind of on your own. Especially when you're in group homes and stuff, like, they give you the, it's like jail. They give you, like, the bare minimum. Like, you're like, okay, you got one razor for the week. They got a bar of salt. Like, it's literally like jail, like, the way the rations are. Like, even with food, like, I lived in this group home where it was 8 girls, and our budget was like $500 for the week for food. And these are teenage girls, and they would eat up all the food and stuff. There were some group homes I lived in where the budget was like $200 a week for about 8 to 7 girls. And so what girls would do is they make us go and like go grocery shopping, take turns. Girls would go grocery shopping during their turn, get a bunch of food they wanted, hide it in their room. So we're only getting like $200-$400 here and there. And they're like taking half the budget to buy crap for their room. And we would literally be fighting over food, fighting over shampoo, fighting over resources. So you always had to work. So it gave me like, you know, a way to escape and stuff. So becoming popular on the internet kind of was, I guess, a plus and just made me make more money. So I just wasn't trying to make money at first. Like I wasn't even thinking about fame or nothing. I just wanted money.
I actually worked in the foster. I worked in the foster care system, like in a group home setting for a long time, and you know, seeing the good and the bad of the foster care system. I know a lot of people that are go into it with the best of intentions ever, but once you get into it, I mean, it does beat you down to where you know you see the system kind of just getting trampled over, and you know you would see people that would take in 4, 5, 6 foster kids because you get X amount of dollars a month and you know, that's their job, but they're doing, you know, what you're saying where they're given, you know, just basically rations of food and everything else out. It's a pretty crazy, you know, that's your next song right there. You know, the foster care system is whack. You know,
I mean, I had this one, like, you know, this one couple that fostered me, and it was like an example with them where like, I didn't have any new shoes or anything. I know they were getting money for me, but I was walking around with like one pair of shoes that were crappy. They wouldn't go and buy me clothes. They wouldn't buy, you know, buy me new stuff. They're like, cause I literally had on just a couple outfits. I had like some free clothes from the Red Cross, and with the money they got, they didn't go and try to like go help me out. You know, I need things for school. They weren't really giving me money for it. So I don't know what they did with the money. And yeah, so I started working and making my own money so I could buy myself stuff. So, cause you know, you're a teenager, you want to look decent when you go to school. You want to, you know, you don't want to be bummy. Like your life's already crap and now you're going to school with like the same pants.
Right.
Terrible.
Yeah, it is not a great place to be, but where you are now,
yay,
you know, tearing up the world, tearing up the metal community, you know, like, you know, you're making movies, you're out there making moves, and it's very refreshing. I say that all the time where I think that like, there's just nothing else to do in metal. Something comes along, you know, you got Bloody Wood over there in India throwing in all this crazy Indian vibes to the music. And, you know, you've got what you're doing now, just pissing everybody off, which is amazing. And I love it, man. I love when people can stir the pot.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. I mean, I wish I could have been loved, but I guess I'll take the controversial role. I guess I'll be the demon. I just hope I feel like if I go to perform, no one like throws tomatoes at me or something. That's the only thing.
Tomato. I don't think people really throw too many tomatoes these days, but you might get a shoot or something.
I'm actually scared to perform that song in front of the wrong crowd. I'm afraid, like, I don't know.
So yeah, I mean, I guess the what is the plan for Cinnamon Babe? Are we, you know, you've got the 3 songs out. You know, are we looking at, you know, putting out a full album? Are you just going to do singles? Are you going to do touring, all that good stuff?
So I actually had like recorded a full album months ago. Due to like management advice, I've been doing singles, and they feel that because I don't have like a label or anything yet, right, that I'm trying to just keep building. I've gotten label offers. Nothing has been like really great yet. A lot of the label offers too were like from specifically hip hop and stuff, like specific labels. And that was one thing that kind of worried me, because they were like, a lot of people approached me with like, yo, like we've never had a rock or an alternative or whatever type of section in our label. I don't know. It was a little bit nerve wracking because I didn't know if they could market me correctly or if they knew where I belonged.
Right.
But my management feels like until I kind of like basically have a label support, like an album release is not really the best idea. As far as shows, like, I want to do shows. I've gotten actually a lot of show offers, especially after the song dropped.
Right.
I don't know why I haven't picked them up yet. One thing I will say, I have really bad anxiety about performing, but I'm going to get over that soon. I don't know, because I feel like this for me is like my voice, and, you know, a lot of people don't realize it, but I'm actually very introverted, and this is kind of the only outlet I have to like speak out. So yeah, like I'm like, I have to kind of build up my courage, but definitely want, I'm going to have to, obviously. So.
Awesome. Well, what is the best place for everybody to follow you and follow the band?
So Cinnamon Babe Music is our Instagram. You can follow us on TikTok at Ultimate Center. Center's with a C, because we call our fan base Centers. I mean,
nice.
We do it with a C because I think like, BTS or so. Oh, no, I think what's it? Panic at the Disco has Sinners with an S or something. I don't know. And then on YouTube, Spotify, all that, Cinnamon Babe. I'm Stormy Maya on everything. Stormy with an I, like Kylie Jenner's baby. And I always say that now because people are like, Stormy, like how do you spell that? I'm like, Kylie Jenner's baby does it. So yeah, that's pretty much it. So hey,
the Messiah. I want to be a lover. I wanna be a queen. I wanna be another day. Another in between. Worship me. Worship me. Call me God. The Messiah. The Messiah.
All right, huge thank you to Stormy Maya. That was a fun conversation. Make sure to check her out. Almost 1 million followers on Instagram, Chris.
Sweet.
1 million followers on Instagram, over 1 million views on TikTok. The world has gone mad.
It's a different world, man. I was just saying this to somebody the other day about, I never in 1 million years thought that I would have like a TikTok channel.
Yeah.
But it does hits.
And you have a lot of, you put up a lot of stuff on there too.
Yeah. I put up like one or two a day. You know, I generally put up one or two a day, and it just does, it does pretty decent, man. I can't complain.
Yeah. I post, I kind of take like some of the stuff that Knotfest takes and puts on their site, and I give them a few days to kind of leeway, but then I'll throw them on just my personal TikTok.
Right.
And it's just crazy. The views are crazy. I mean, mm-hmm. some of these TikTok videos have way more views than the actual interview.
Yeah.
Most of them do. And then like I see new names in the comment section. Like it's just a whole nother platform of people that want to come on and talk. I mean, that Max Cavalera talking about the Pantera reunion TikToks get, you know, 3,500 views on my TikTok.
Sure.
And 50 comments and all these likes and stuff. So it's definitely gets to a whole new audience out there.
Yeah. I know for me with the TikTok, especially with Chris Aiken Presents, you know, I just post a little clip, you know, a minute or whatever, and then it leads people to go and watch the actual interview if they're interested in,
yeah,
you know, Ralph Sheepers of Primal Fear or whoever the fuck I'm interviewing. They'll be like, oh, here's this, and I wasn't aware of this show. Now let me go find it. So, you know, it definitely, I've seen my numbers go up on both Classic Metal Show and Chris Aiken Presents, and I really don't put that much time into it. I mean, quite literally, it's about 5 minutes a day. You know, it's not a lot of work.
Right. My recommendations this week, as we talked a little earlier, it's all music this week. A lot of new songs. I was going through the kind of the new release radar and wanted to hit on a few songs. We'll leave the Megadeth for last. I wanted to I know you don't care for the band Muse, but they put out a track called Kill or Be Killed, and they fucking, normally a band like this would just play, you know, rock music, but I mean, they, they've taken some metal undertones and even have like a breakdown in this song and like a fucking heavy ass riff. I think a band like Muse, you have to like the vocalist to really like the band, and I love his voice.
Okay.
And so it's like his voice over like just some super heavy stuff. So like they've been, this song, this new song, Kill or Be Killed, man, I'm like, God bless America. You know, you've done it. You've done it again, Muse.
Sure.
So you definitely check that one out. And then Ozzy's latest with Tony Iommi with Degradation Rules.
Right. It's a great song.
Those dudes together, they got something there.
Like, well, yeah, they might find some success if they do some other things together.
You know, like I posted as when that song came out, I'm like, breaking news, you know, Ozzy plus Iommi, you know, works. Yeah. Do that.
Yeah, it's the first time since he's been working with Andrew Watt that he's done a damn near perfect song. So I love that tune. It's really good.
Yeah, it hits on pretty much every. I always, you know, that's what I hated about the last album. That's what I hated about the first track is like, I need a lot more going on around Ozzy. Like Ozzy's voice is cool, but it's very, you know, very one trick. Right. So you need a bunch of stuff going on around it. And, you know, you got the harmonica, like, you know, harkening back to the old days of Sabbath, and you've got, you know, just that riff behind it. And there's just a lot going on in this song that made me just go, God damn, what a great track. And I just wish that, you know, maybe they can do more of that. That would be great. I will say that Patient Number 9 fucking got stuck in my head one day, and I went back and listened to it again. And I was like,
stop it.
I'm just like, oh,
that song blows.
I don't understand why wouldn't you put out this Degradation Rules track first?
Yeah. And why would you ever put something that is like Jeff Beck from, but they did that last time too. Wasn't the first track they put out there, either first or second track they put out there was like the Elton John song.
Right. I like that song too, though.
I mean, I like that song. I don't mind that song, but it's like, dude, put out something that sounds like Ozzy so that we get excited about an Ozzy album, not the big song with Jeff Beck. Right. Sorry, but I don't give a shit about Jeff Beck as a metal fan. I just don't.
When I listen to music and I hear a riff that I can write sitting on the couch, it really bothers me. And that's what happened with that Patient Number 9 track. Yeah. It's like the riff just sounds basic and boring. Mm-hmm. And that's the one thing I just hate about these Andrew Watt things. It's just basic and boring.
Yeah. And you know what? Throwing a legendary name on, well, that's played by so-and-so, that doesn't mean shit to me.
Right.
I don't care. I don't care if Eric Clapton stopped by to play an average riff. It's still an average riff. That's what makes this Iommi thing good. I mean, if Iommi just would have just turned in any old piece of shit and they used it, then it wouldn't be good. He put forth some effort to come up with a great riff that fits the song.
Oh yeah.
And therefore it works, you know? So look, I'm with you. I love this song. It's a great tune.
And then the last is, we'll talk about the Megadeth, Night Stalkers featuring Ice-T, most recently released. And then we'll be back. I was watching the videos the other day, and I guess this is totally what I see from it. And I don't know. There's no, like, I don't see this written down anywhere, but it looks like they're giving you the backstory of Vic Rattlehead. They're kind of doing a prequel version of Vic Rattlehead and kind of where he came from. And
right.
And, the first, so going back, watching the, We'll Be Back video, you kind of see him getting killed and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. And then in the Night Stalkers video, you start seeing all the hooks coming out of the mouth and, you know, adding the eyes, you know, the sunglasses or whatnot, and the things over the ears, all this stuff. It's like, all right. I mean, somebody's taking some, unlike the Master of Puppets lyric video, looks like somebody's taking their time with this and making very cool cinematic videos.
Sure.
The track Will Be Back. Awesome. Night Stalkers is good. I don't like that it's pumping that Ice-T is on it, because Ice-T in this track is useless. And I love the last few body counts. Like, I was hoping for some just
it's not Ice-T riffing. It's Ice-T as the voice of a, you know, coming over a loudspeaker or a CB radio or something.
Very That's similar all it to really what is. Dave Mustaine did on the Body Count record. But
yeah,
it's just like, you know, you're hoping for like a really awesome Ice-T bridge or something like that. But all you get is basic, you know, just spoken word.
Yeah. Don't hate it. I like, I'll be honest. I was totally hoping this album sucked.
Oh, I know.
I really was, because of my allegiance to Ellefson, and boy, they are two for two in my world. These sound like two really good Megadeth songs, which has me very pumped up for what, next month or when is it, September 19th or whatever, that it actually comes out. September 2nd. I think it's September 2nd that it comes out, but I'm pumped for it. I can't wait for it. You know, again, I love Megadeth. As much as I want to hate on it, I can't. It's Megadeth. Yeah. I love them. So I'm in.
Yeah, I feel like, at least with these two tracks, I don't know about the rest of the album, I haven't heard it yet, but with these two tracks, you're definitely getting Megadeth. You know, you're not getting them trying to do their version of the Black Album or their version of Load and Reload. You're getting Megadeth,
right?
And it harkens back to like old school Megadeth, which is amazing. Yep. So I am completely pumped about this. It's thrashing, it's fast, it's, you know, it's in your face, it's gritty, it's dirty, his voice is great. Like I'm a big fan of Megadeth, and like I am with you. Like when the stuff with Ellefson happened, I was just like, screw it all. And then now I'm like, God damn it, Dave, you did it again.
Yeah, you son of a bitch. You're making me like you anyway.
So
nice. Well, I have a few recommendations, actually. On TV, there is a documentary on Netflix called The Most Hated Man on the Internet.
I saw something pop up about that today.
That is excellent. Oh my God. I was aware of the story anyway, and I won't really break it too much, other than it's yet another one, just kind of like the Tinder swindler or whatever. It's just another guy. It's the guy that he put up a website where people could upload their revenge porn.
Nice.
And it's about this guy, you know, at his 2-year run of just being huge and then his fall from grace. But yeah, Netflix, when they do it right, they do it right. And this is another great one. It's called, like I said, it's called The Most Hated Man on the Internet. And boy, is it. If you can watch this thing and not absolutely hate this fucking guy, then you're a better guy than me, because I literally was yelling at my television screen every time they popped this guy up talking shit. I was like, shut up, you fuck. You know, I was just angry. So
were you aware of his website before this documentary?
I was. Oh, of course. Of course, you know me and porn. I love porn. So of course I was aware of his website, but great, great documentary. And then two musical things. One, and they're both interviews that I actually did for Chrisaka Presents, but that being said, that's not why. One is this band called Seventh Storm, which is Mike Gasper from Moonspell, his new band after 3 decades with Moonspell. And it sounds nothing like Moonspell. I honestly went into it thinking, okay, it's going to be some Moonspell knockoff, which I would be fine with. I like Moonspell. But it honestly sounds like if you took Evergrey and put in a much heavier drummer, that's what it sounds like. It's like very aggressive sounding progressive metal with some death metal blast beats mixed in. It's a cool sounding band. So Seventh Storm is one, and then the other one is a band called Gunshine. Their album is out now. It's a new band by Austin Ingerman from New Year's Day. Okay. And surprisingly, you know, this is another one. It sounds nothing like New Year's Day at all. If anything, it sounds like classic Guns N' Roses. It's really a different thing. And their singer, what's his name? Justin Benson.
Okay.
Most unique voice I've heard probably since Volbeat came out.
Oh, wow.
You know, I mean, you know how the first time you heard Volbeat, you were like, damn, that's different.
Right.
You know, this guy doesn't sound like Volbeat at all. So don't write it off because of that, but he doesn't sound like anything else. I wish I could tell you, yeah, he sounds like, you know, Brian Johnson or Axl or whatever, but no, he's a completely unique voice that I'd never heard before. And again, Austin, he's a guitar player in New Year's Day. And man, this guy can play some seriously tasty 80s sounding riffs. So check that one out as well. It's called Gunshine.
Nice.
Good stuff.
Well, awesome. Well, I think that does it for another episode of Talk To Me here, notfest.com. Make sure you guys are also checking out Cinnamon Babe, all of her stuff up on YouTube and Spotify. Only 3 tracks out, but man, it shows you what streaming and TikTok and everything can do. You know, you can put out something a little controversial. People are going to pick up on it. So make sure to check her stuff out. And, you know, she said in the interview that they possibly have some shows coming up, things like that. Cool. So she's a little nervous about playing live, but
well, she might need to have a couple more songs.
Yeah. It's going to be 3 tracks and 9 covers.
Yeah. Hey, here's our 15-minute set. Let's go.
Awesome. Well, for the Talk To Me podcast, I am Joshua Toomey.
I am Chris Agin.
And we will talk to you soon.
See ya.
The Talk To Me podcast presented by NotFest.com. Follow the show at Talk To Me Talk. Be sure to subscribe, rate the podcast, and leave a review on your favorite podcast app to get the latest from the Talk To Me podcast.